from Erie to Philadelphia, Pittsburgh to Harrisburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the May primary features a wide range of local and county races, statewide judicial races, and in one congressional district, a special election. Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting is here with details. Golf can be more than a sport. It can teach young people a wide range of values. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Pat Zook from First Tee of the Lowcountry in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And even more than high taxes, regulations stifle economic growth and prevent the creation of new jobs. But efforts are underway in the state legislature to cut through the red tape. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas in a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. State Representative Brian Sims, a Philadelphia Democrat, finds himself in the middle of a national controversy after he posted videos of himself harassing and intimidating a woman who was peacefully protesting outside of a Philadelphia abortion clinic. In the video, Sims can be seen calling the protester an, quote, old white lady, and berating her for exercising her First Amendment right to speak out against activity at the abortion clinic. Sims' actions have brought a wave of criticism upon him, including a call by GOP State Chairman Val DiGiorgio, who has called upon the Philadelphia District Attorney and Attorney General to open a criminal investigation into Sims' conduct. The incident has sparked national coverage, with U.S. Senator Ted Cruz labeling Sims a, quote, hateful, angry Democrat. Sims remains defiant, calling his critics, quote, Bible bullies, although the woman who was harassed by the state representative says she forgives him and is praying for him. As for that abortion clinic, it is the largest abortion clinic operated by Planned Parenthood in Pennsylvania. According to the Pennsylvania Family Institute, a review of health and safety records show the Locust Street Surgical Center has failed 13 of their last 23 patient survey inspections. Included in those failures are a failure to report child sex abuse, and the failure to conduct required background checks on employees. If you have an easy pass to drive on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, you might want to take a look at your statement. Several motorists have reported finding overcharges and charges for trips they did not make. A spokesman for the Turnpike Commission said the usual cause for an overcharge is an improperly installed transponder. If you check your statement and find an overcharge or a mistaken charge, contact the Turnpike Commission. They will make the necessary corrections to your account. And this past week, gun rights advocates packed the Capitol Rotunda for the annual Second Amendment rally. During the rally, State Representative Daryl Metcalf announced he will ask fellow lawmakers to impeach Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto, who signed city legislation barring certain weapons, in apparent violation of both state law and the state constitution. Groups from around the state participated in the rally, which took on an added sense of urgency this year in light of ramped-up efforts by those seeking more restrictions on gun rights. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The media focus is on next year's presidential race, but the upcoming May 21st primary election ballot will include a long list of local and county offices that have a more direct impact on your daily life. Voters will also nominate candidates for two statewide judicial positions, and a vacant seat in Congress will be filled in a special election. Here with a rundown on this year's primary ballot is veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal.
Chris, let's talk first of all. We have two statewide judicial races. Can you first of all explain what court we're talking about? And then we'll talk about the candidates and the primary.
Sure, Loman. So in Pennsylvania, we have three statewide appellate courts. One is the Commonwealth Court, which handles lawsuits against the state and administrative law. Then you've got, of course, the Supreme Court. And then the one that has elections this year is the Superior Court. The Superior Court sits in three judge panels. The judges often are not with each other. They're just in their office looking at briefs, and they are reviewing cases from the county level. So something some of your listeners may be familiar with is if someone gets convicted in a county court of breaking and entering, burglaring someone's house, and that now convicted criminal wants to appeal his or her sentence, that would go to the Superior Court, which, like I said, does the reviews. It's the court right below the Supreme Court. And from an electoral angle, Lohman, oftentimes both parties look to the Superior Court members to figure out who their nominees for Supreme Court would be. So taking nothing away from what they do legally, which I'm not hooked into as I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on TV, from an electoral standpoint, both parties look at Superior Court as kind of their AAA ball club to get ready for when there are eventually openings in the Supreme Court.
And the situation with the Superior Court, as with the other two you mentioned, is that voters all across Pennsylvania, every precinct in Pennsylvania, every municipality get to vote on this. So we have these two open seats on the Superior Court of Pennsylvania. This is a primary. Are the primaries contested?
Yes, it's interesting. Both parties have endorsed two candidates, and both parties have another candidate running in addition to that. So regardless of your party, Republican or Democratic, when your listeners walk into the voting booth in about a week, they will see before them three choices, regardless of their party, for Superior Court. So if I may, I'll talk about the Democrats first.
Sure.
They have Judge Dan McCaffrey from Philadelphia. His brother is also a judge in Pennsylvania. He is endorsed, as is a woman from Pittsburgh named Amanda Green Hawkins, who is a labor lawyer. She's worked for the U.S. Steelworkers. And then there's a third person who's not endorsed, also a lawyer from Pittsburgh. Her name is Beth Taurasi. She ran in 2017 briefly for Congress and then got out. So you have an endorsed team of one man and one woman and then another woman running. So on the Democratic side, it's two women, both from Allegheny County, and one man also from Pittsburgh. So that is kind of, to me, a traditional Democratic slate because Philadelphia and Allegheny County are the two largest places in the state and obviously lots of Democrats there. So on the Republican side, there are three women running. Judge Christy Lee Peck, who is a county judge in central Pennsylvania in Cumberland County. Megan King is a deputy DA from Chester County. And those two women, Megan King and Judge Peck, they are the endorsed Republican candidates. The third candidate on the GOP side is Rebecca Warren, who was now an attorney in private practice, but for many years she was the district attorney in Montour County up in north central Pennsylvania. So those three will battle it out for the Republican nomination. The other three will battle it out for the Democratic nomination.
In addition to the two statewide judicial races, voters are actually this year going to find a rather long ballot, are they not? Don't we have county and a whole wide array of school board and municipal elections?
Absolutely, Lohman. This is local election year. So folks in most counties, in addition to electing their county officers like row office and register of wills and controller, will also have races for their local municipalities, city council, borough council. If you live in a township, you're electing mostly supervisors, some commissioners. In these primaries, you can have a lot of people running for these slots. Also, there's school board. Some school boards run across the entire district. Some school boards like mine, we have regions, so you kind of have to figure that out.
We are talking with veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting, talking about the upcoming May 21st primary election. And Chris, before we move on from the school board, county, and local offices that are up, how important are these offices? I know a lot of times turnout really drops dramatically. You're maybe lucky to get 20% turnout in these races, but are these not the people who really have the biggest impact on your day-to-day life?
I have always felt that, Lohman, that your township supervisor, your mayor, your school board members, Most people, if they're having issues with their property taxes, it's not because of big increases in the taxes that are apportioned to their municipality. It's the taxes apportioned to their school district. So, yes, this is your chance to get to know these candidates and talk to them personally or via email or whatever. So it is very important. And it's not as if members of Congress or the governor aren't doing important things too, but these are folks you're going to see in the grocery store and you're going to see at the chicken dinner at the volunteer fire company. These are people in your community. So take this time to let them know what it is you feel about. And you're right, especially in areas of the state that are more lopsided in their political registration, mostly for Democrats, mostly in cities. There really is no general election in the city of Pittsburgh or the city of Philadelphia. So for them, the Democratic primary in about a week, that's it. I mean, you win the Democratic primary, you're off to the races. In fewer places, you can say the same thing about Republicans, whoever wins the Republican primary. In some of these rural areas, I mean, there's a general election, but it's kind of a de facto one. So some of these races can be over in the May primary.
There are also for voters in the 12th Congressional District, and I'll let you explain where that is. There's also going
Thank
to
you.
Actually, it is a lot of places. It's a very big, sprawling congressional district. And there's going to be a special election to fill a vacant congressional seat. Tell us a bit about how that came to be and who the candidates.
So Congressman Tom Marino of Lycoming County, Williamsport area, he resigned back at the beginning of the year due mainly to some ongoing health issues he had. So under the Constitution, Lohman, you can't appoint anyone to the U.S. House of Representatives. Every member of the U.S. House of Representatives since the country became a country has been elected. So the way you do that when someone dies or retires midstream is you have a special election. Okay, so that special election will be May 21st in the 15 counties of north central Pennsylvania, basically from the northernmost Harrisburg suburbs all the way up through Williamsport, over to State College and Potter County, and then east the other way into Bradford and Susquehanna. So it is the very definition of a sprawling congressional district. As I mentioned before, some places are more lopsided in their registration. The 12th district is a reliably red Republican district. So this special election, Lohman, it's on primary day, but it is a general election. So if you're a registered independent or nonpartisan in that district, you can come out and vote specifically in this special election. So whoever wins that race on May 21st, literally the next week, once the election results are validated in the state, they'll be down in D.C. getting sworn in and become a congressman. The Republican candidate is State Rep Fred Keller. He is from Snyder County. Because he is the Republican in an overwhelmingly Republican district, he is likely to win. Nothing against the other candidate in the race, but this is State Rep Fred Keller's race to lose. I think he's going to win on May 21st. The district voted about 63.5% for President Trump in 2016. All the counties in it, besides maybe Center County, are Republican. So a week or two after May 21st, Fred Keller is going to go from the State House to the U.S. House. And ironically, Lohman, he will have to resign his seat in the State House, of course, before he goes to Congress. So that will engender another special election in his State House district in Snyder and Union, I believe, to fill that, which I assume they'll have a special election for in the summer. So for those of you in the 12th Congressional District, you have a congressional race in about a week as well as your local races.
We have again been talking with veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. And Chris, if folks want to learn more about this, want to keep in touch with you to find out what's happening politically all across Pennsylvania, how can they do that?
Well, a couple ways, Lohman. They can go to my website, eagleconsult.com. They may follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @Eagle63. I also appear weekly on a public affairs show that airs in most of the state called This Week in Pennsylvania, which airs Sunday mornings across most of the state and even sometimes Saturday evenings. So those are places where people can find me.
Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, thank you again for being here.
Thank you, Loman.
First Tee of the Lowcountry is one of many such programs across the nation and here in Pennsylvania that use the sport of golf to help teach important values to young people. To learn more, Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Pat Zook. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Pat, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Well, I appreciate you having me. It's my honor to be with you.
Pat, I've been a big fan of the First Tee program for many, many years. Chat with the listeners a little bit about what they need to know about the First Tee program.
Well, the First Tee is a youth development program, and what we try to do is help young people learn to live by our 9 core values. It's a character education program, it's a life skill program, and it's all done in a very fun atmosphere while the kids are learning to play a game that they can play their whole lives, a game of golf.
I know from my familiarity with the program, we're not out there trying to turn young kids into Tiger Woods or Brooke Henderson. Talk about those 9 values that you teach through the program.
They're all the things that you would expect what I like to term a productive contributing member of society would exhibit in their lives. And like you said, if we produce another Tiger Woods or another Brooke Henderson, that's great. But I'm much more concerned about who are the next 100 businessmen that we produce. So that's really the focus. We want young people to grow up and become contributing, productive members of society.
Share a little bit about what those lessons are, because I don't think people who do not play the game of golf understand how much respect and integrity is supposed to be part of the game. So let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, well, honesty and integrity is at the core of the game of golf. It's one of the first lessons that the kids learn in our program is that there's no referee following you around. If something happens and you need to be assessed a penalty, you're expected to call that penalty on yourself. You know, there's a very famous story about Bobby Jones playing in the U.S. Open. He was over his ball and the ball moved, and nobody else saw it, including his caddy. But he called the penalty on himself, and he ended up, that was a U.S. Open that he didn't win, and he finished 1 or 2 shots out of the lead at the end mostly because of the penalty he called on himself. So the game has a very rich tradition of honesty, integrity, respecting your opponent, acting in a sportsmanlike manner. We begin and end every round by shaking hands and so forth.
In much of society where you get involved in athletics, there are referees. And not only do you have to self-report in the game with the referee, but much of the time people start arguing with the referee. In this case, we're self-reporting and a very, very refreshing attribute of the game. Pat, how did you get inspired to have a First Tee program in South Carolina?
Well, here in the Lowcountry, in the Hilton Head area, it was actually a combined effort with some local citizens, but mostly through the Boys and Girls Club.
And you collaborate quite a bit with the school systems.
Yeah, we do. The First Tee has a program called the National Schools Program. And we provide what's called adaptive golf equipment. It's plastic clubs and balls that look like tennis balls, and the targets all have sort of the hook part of Velcro, so they stick to the targets. And it's a lot of fun to use, but the phys ed teachers actually go through a training process, and they're supplied with lesson plans, and they are asked to do the National Schools Program as part of their regular curriculum for all the students in the elementary schools that they're in. At least 2 weeks out of the year. So it's here in the Lowcountry. Last year it was about 10,000 kids. This year we're looking at about 13,000 to 14,000.
This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio program. My guest today is Pat Zook, the executive director of the First Tee, the Lowcountry in South Carolina. Pat, what's a typical experience for a young kid the first time they come out and engage in the program?
Well, one of the things that we train our coaches to do, and I've been involved in the coach training with the First Tee for 10 or 12 years now, is we want the coaches to create a fun atmosphere where the kids are doing things rather than standing there listening to somebody explain stuff to them. So the first thing they're going to do is they're going to come out, They're going to warm up real quickly to get their bodies revved up and ready to go, and then they're going to do some fun activities. Instead of learning how far to take a club back to hit a putt a certain distance, they're going to play a game in which they have to learn that on their own, not only to play the game, but how they learn those values and skills that go with it, is that they discover how it's done. And we think that's a much more long-lasting way for them to learn.
And it's not only a great game that way, but it's also a healthy lifestyle. It's not something that you want to have smartphones and iPads with you.
Yeah, the first tee also has a part of our curriculum is called the 9 Healthy Habits. And these range from personal things like safety and getting enough sleep to being a good member of the community. And those are also incorporated in. So that activity-based, the fact that we try to teach the kids, treat the kids rather as experts on themselves, those are all involved in how young people learn at the first tee going here.
Pat, do you have a story that you've experienced where you know that you're making a difference?
It's kind of a simple story, but I think it's indicative of how things happen. This happened maybe 10 or 12 years ago back in Kansas City. There was one day we had a group of kids that were there in the afternoon, and I was sort of at one end of the range. And all of a sudden at the other end of the range, there was sort of a commotion, and I walked over there, and there was this young man who just did not want to do this today. He wasn't into it. He didn't want to do it at all. And the coaches were trying to prod him, and the people from his youth group were trying to prod him. And I said, hey, wait a minute, let me handle this. So I said, I know you don't want to do this today, so you can go over there and sit down. I said, but you can't just sit there. You got to do something. You got to read a book. You got to do something. And I'll tell you what, you can do this. I think you're selling yourself short. So he went over and sat down, and the next week he showed up, picked up a club, started hitting balls, no problem. And he ended up joining our regular programs and was a participant in our regular programs for a couple years after that. So I know we made an impact on that young man. And he was from a fairly challenging circumstance as well. So that was pretty gratifying.
Pat, are you aware of programs in Pennsylvania, and how would people find out about those? And for other people listening to this program, if they want more information from you about your program, how can they contact you?
Well, around the country and also in a couple of foreign countries, if you go to thefirsttee.org, you can actually look for locations right off of the homepage there in pretty much any state in the union.
Well, this is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest, Pat Zook, the executive director of the First Tee Low Country. Pat, thank you for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio Program.
Thank you, Joe, and you have a great day.
State regulations and the amount of time and money businesses must spend to comply with them hinders business development and growth. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this American Radio Journal commentary.
Pennsylvania has a regulation problem. Our regulation compendium, the Pennsylvania Code, lists all of the more than 150,000 regulations on the books in our Commonwealth. We're fourth in the nation behind New York, Illinois, and Oregon. According to the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, the Pennsylvania Code has 12.8 million words and would take the average reader 713 hours or 18 weeks at 40 hours per week to read through. Why is this wrong? And how do regulations impact our lives, our community, and our businesses? The status quo of burdensome taxes and regulations stifles innovation, limits opportunity, and ultimately holds the people of our state back from realizing their potential. With a robust workforce and abundant natural resource supply, Pennsylvania has so much promise and is on the verge of unleashing its potential. Pennsylvania can be a place where businesses come to grow, thrive, and be part of our communities, but our massive and overly burdensome regulatory state virtually guarantees that won't be the case. Here in Pennsylvania, we must build on the strong economic momentum from federal efforts to reduce and reform unnecessary regulations by implementing our own package of common sense state-level reforms. We thank the leaders who have introduced this legislation for envisioning a future that recognizes Pennsylvania's promise and taking clear, substantive action to get us closer to that future. Recently, we key voted several pieces of legislation that were being considered before the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. This package of bills would help improve the state's regulatory culture by restoring legislative oversight in the promulgation of rules, ensuring existing regulations are systematically reviewed in efficacy and impact, and ensuring the application of existing laws collaborative. These bills will encourage the legislature and administrative agencies to work together in partnership with a focus on effectively managing regulations rather than simply creating them. We believe that improving the regulatory culture of the state is a key step forward unleashing the state's potential and maximizing prosperity for all Pennsylvanians. Are we saying that regulations are wrong? No. Some regulations help protect the health and welfare of our citizens, but according to Mercatus Research, there are 208 regulations on the design and use of ladders and 190 on consumer packaging alone. Seems ridiculous, and they are. And those are just two examples. Some regulations, like occupational licenses, serve as barriers to opportunity and make it harder for folks to start a business and pursue their version of the American dream. For example, to be a cosmetologist, you must have a 10th grade education, spend 1,250 days in school, and pass an exam. Barbers have to have an 8th grade education, spend the same 1,250 days in school, and pass two exams. Pennsylvania has so much promise, is on the verge of unleashing its potential, and economic opportunity is just within reach for many people, but too often unnecessary and burdensome regulations get in the way. Americans for Prosperity is committed to breaking down these sorts of barriers to opportunity to make it easier for people to improve their lives and help others do the same, because free people are capable of extraordinary things. So what does this package of bills look like? Senate Bill 250 is comprehensive regulatory reform that includes many of the pieces in the separate bills that I'll mention. Senate Bill 251 and House Bill 1055 create an independent Office of the Repealer to review existing regulations and implements a two-in, one-out standard. So that's two regulations in for one out for the creation of new rules. Senate Bill 252 and House Bill 509 reform the administration permitting process in the Commonwealth. Senate Bill 253 and House Bill 762 require agencies to appoint a regulatory compliance officer. Senate Bill 5 and House Bill 806, the real stars of this package, are the RAINS Act. It requires the General Assembly to approve regulations that would have an impact of more than $1 million annually. That's to a municipality, to a company, or to a community. Senate Bill 119 would count, cap, and cut the number of regulations in Pennsylvania. I'm Anna McCausland, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity. Find us on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania, on Facebook by searching for AFP Pennsylvania, and online at AmericansForProsperity.org.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WNTP-AM and WFIL-AM in Lafayette Hill, along with WLSH-AM in Lansford, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.